This is Suit Up Sports.
Suit Up Sports.
Where opinions are as sharp as a tailored suit. No fluff, no gimmicks, just unfiltered, hard-hitting takes on sports and a whole lot more. It's time to suit up. Now here's your host, DJ the Suit Stout.
Welcome to Suit Up Sports. I'm DJ the Suit Stout, along with 10-year NFL vet Frank Garcia. And boys, we're down to two teams, Kansas City Chiefs, Philadelphia Eagles. And I got to be honest with you, I'm freaking pissed. Like, I'm pissed. Like,
what are you pissed about?
Because I can't stand either one of the damn teams in a Super Bowl. normally the Super Bowl you get fired up for, and I am fired up for the things that I love, such as we're going to damn smoke a pig, and we're going to have people over here, and we're going to have a damn party, but we're going to have a 48-hour party, and all my friends and people that come to that party are going to call in sick to work on Monday because it's that kind of damn party. We're going to stay up 24 hours cooking that pig, and I'm excited about that. But once the game starts, I can't stand the Philadelphia Eagles. I can't stand them.
Well, the reason why.
Well, I'm a Giants fan, right?
So that's the reason.
That's the reason. And I can't stand their fans, most of them. One of my best friends, Kevin Huss, he's a huge Eagles fan, and I'm excited for him. My brother-in-law, Brian Fleb, he's a big Eagles fan, and my nephew, Ethan. So I've got Eagle fans around me enough to where I'm going to pull for them now because I'm so sick of the Kansas City thing. Like, let me say this. All this shit about people saying the refs are fixing this and Kansas City gets lucky and you know, they want Mahomes to beat Brady's, whatever, all the conspiracy stuff you can read. I never bought into it.
NFL's fixed.
NFL's fixed. I don't buy into any of that. I really don't. However, it is just kind of a hell of a coincidence that every damn Kansas City game, there's a reason why you sit there and go, shit. I mean, maybe there's some truth to this. And yesterday, on 4th and 1, with replay.
Well, I mean, if you want to talk about that series, it wasn't just 4th and 1. It was really, you know, and I was wondering if they were even going to challenge when it got to 3rd and 3rd and inches.
Yeah.
Right? Because that was really a better – he was more in front of the line on that play than he was on the 4th and 1. You know, and I think that the mistake was not challenging on 3rd and 1 and getting to 4th and 1 and then continually running the same play that hadn't worked except for once during the game. They tried it 4 or 5 times.
Yeah, exactly.
And didn't get anything.
Listen, and everybody knows, I mean, I consider myself a pretty smart sports guy. You obviously played the game. You actually played center and left guard. So you're going to relate exactly to what I'm saying. Everybody watching that game, especially if you've watched Buffalo throughout the season, everybody knows that when Josh Allen keeps it, he goes to the left. Mm-hmm. He goes off the left guard every single time, every time. And yesterday, every single time, that's what he did. So Kansas City knew exactly what he was doing. But with all that, and so I agree with you, the play calling from Joe Brady in those situations.
But here's the thing. I mean, here's to counteract what you're saying, because, you know, when you look at the Philadelphia Eagles and we look at that game earlier, everybody in the world knows that they're going to run it too. The difference is
they can do it.
Is that because they have guys that can execute it, right? I mean, Saquon Barkley or Jalen Hurts, you know, guys that are running backs playing. Josh Allen's a big dude and can run just as well as those guys and is going to be able to push through. But if you don't have the guys up front, I mean, when you look at Philadelphia's offensive line, they're 340, 350, 330 across the middle of that, and they're all explosive and powerful. Where you look at Buffalo's, they're not as big and as physical as those guys.
Yeah.
They're not the number one rushing team in the NFL.
But also the difference is when Philadelphia does it, they look like Leonidas on the movie 300, all behind their shields, all packed together very tightly, and they move in concert.
Buffalo is spread out.
Exactly. Yeah. So when Philadelphia does it, it's not just Jalen Hurts and his line. It's the three dudes behind him that weigh 250. They're also pushing him forward, which we see every single time.
So with Josh Allen, if that's the case, why wouldn't every team mimic what that is? Because that's not the reason. The reason isn't the tight formation and the guys behind. The reason is those three guys up front creating the apex that's able to knock guys off the ball. When you look at that Philadelphia game, they had a big-ass nose guard for the Washington Redskins and a good player. That right guard and center put him 4 yards deep on his ass, and he crumbled like an accordion, right?
I mean, everybody has.
And everybody has.
I mean, Lulu had the one play, which was great.
Right. I mean, we can get into that game, yeah, but, yeah. you know, I mean – the Bills trying to do that over and over and over again, it's not the same because they don't have the same type of personnel.
I agree.
To me, that was where the game was determined. And I think both teams were equally matched. I think both teams deserved to win. I think both quarterbacks played about the same. There wasn't one group that stood out over the other. Both teams, I think, were as evenly matched as you're going to see in any game this season. The difference was Andy Reid in crucial situations with, calling plays and running their offense. Patrick Mahomes, first, fourth and one. Everybody thinks sneak. Guess what? He rolls out and has a lead blocker. If you take Mahomes, he dumps it and the guy scores a touchdown. If you drop, Mahomes just rushes and gets, it's an easy read. But he had them on the edge now and he used the Eagles' aggressiveness against him and just rolled out. I'm sorry, the Bills' aggressiveness over him. They're tied in, packed in tight, trying to stop what? That play, that push, that rush. And boom, they're out to the outside. So, I mean,
I think another big difference, though,
is situational football is a huge part of the game.
It is. And I think that the play calling from Joe Brady in those situations left something to be desired.
What play calling? Quarterback sneak.
Running the quarterback sneak to the left.
That's not a play call. That's it.
What is it? I mean, somebody's calling the damn play.
It's not running your offense.
Well, whatever it is, somebody's in charge of calling it.
Yeah.
And I mean, whoever that was.
That's right.
Made a mistake. Everybody knew what the fuck they were, doing.
Well, the first or second time, okay, maybe once, maybe twice, but when they stuffed you two times and then you get it the third time, in the middle of the field, situation isn't really, dire, but when it counts, the Kansas City Chiefs have some big dudes up front that are going to be able to knock the guys back.
But with that being said, back to the original point, mm-hmm. That was a first down. Like that was a first down. And every piece of technology we have, everybody on the broadcast, including both announcers and whoever the hell the referee guy, I forget which broadcast it was, but he agreed. Everyone agreed that a third of the ball crossed the line. They put the laser line across Chris Jones' back, number 95. You could see it. It was a first down. So, If there was never any talk about Kansas City getting calls, we probably would go, I could see it go either way, right? I mean, it was definitely not an egregiously bad call.
No.
You could see it both ways.
Well, the thing that got me more, and this is what...
But it was a bad call.
I don't know if it's a bad call or it was just one
with
of those...
the technology we have today, every look that we saw on TV, including the best one, which was when you look through the five on the back of Chris Jones' jersey, when you see both angles, the ball had to have crossed.
Angles and things like that can be different, right? And, the best view is still, in my opinion, the referees on the field. They miss calls, too. You're right. And
the
issue was is that one referee, if the first down line was, let's say, the 20-yard line, one referee was running on the 19 or 19 and a half, and the other one was right on the 20 or maybe 20 and a half, right? And all they had to get to was the 20. So the referees initially coming out in two different positions, I think, is what kind of, made us think that, okay, that was a first down. But when the referee that spots the ball, every referee has a responsibility on the football field, right? They have an area in which they're supposed to monitor,
yep.
Right? The field judge, the back judge, the side judges, and those two side judges spot. Anytime the ball is in the left hand or on the left side of the field, the ref on the left is the one responsible for the spot. Even if the ref on the right can't overrule that, right? They have a hierarchy in how they call games. So the one on the ref was the only one that we should have been, the ref on the left was the only one that we should have been watching in that. The one on the right didn't matter. He's looking to see where the ref is on the left, and he's spotting and what he thinks might be the best, but then he matches what the guy on the left is.
I know what you're saying, and it's all true, but regardless, what I'm saying is this. If you saw the replays that everyone saw on TV, that the commentators saw, that the official in the booth saw, that you and I saw, that everyone that was watching the game with us saw, everyone, whether they were rooting for Kansas City or Buffalo, said that was a first down. So how the hell do these referees not see these same angles? How is there somebody that's not in charge of this to go, that's a damn first down?
Because
like in baseball, for instance, in Major League Baseball, mm-hmm. when there's a challenge, the booth is in New York City. Mm-hmm. So it's the officials, the referee, the umpire on the field, he puts his headphones on, but he's communicating to a center in New York City where they've got every damn angle you can have. They still get some wrong, mm-hmm. but it's a lot better than the NFL. the NFL is also expanding replay next year to cover other things like pass interference, late hits, which we both agree is a good idea. But when you've got all these angles and we're seeing them on TV, there's no freaking way that these referees aren't seeing it. And again, I'm not coming from a point of that this is fixed and all that shit. I'm not saying that at all.
You think you don't think the referee went out there and said, oh, this is the Chiefs.
No.
They just stopped them.
No,
let me mark the ball a half a yard behind knowing where the spot is.
I don't think that at all. I don't think that. But what I do think is, how the hell do they not see the same shit we see and call that a first down? And then I would say it is just kind of amazing to me that Kansas City finds themselves on the positive side of those calls every game, every game. And every game. And again, I'm not saying it's a conspiracy.
You're a Mets fan. You're a Giants fan. I'm a Suns fan. The teams I've rooted for, the Panthers, we aren't the teams that we're going to get the favorable calls ever.
That's a great
point. When the Suns played the Lakers, we knew that we were going to get screwed by the refs in some way, shape, or form. When Jordan played anybody, he was getting the calls regardless.
Yeah.
Right? Why? Because in order to beat the champ, you can't run quarterback sneak and tickle him. You have to knock him out.
That's true.
And that was the difference in the game. You had a heavyweight fight. The champion, even though he might look like he got his ass kicked, is going to win the decision. Because he's the champion.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what the Chiefs are.
Yeah.
Whether we want to think that or not, that's always been the case. It's not just the Chiefs. That's sports in general, buddy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hate to say it because I've always felt it as a fan, but I never was on the right side of those calls as a fan. I was on the side. Like I said, I was with the Suns with, you know, the 90s with KJ and Barkley rooting against the Lakers or the Bulls when they got to the championship.
Yeah.
When Jordan went up, regardless if there was a guy 3 feet, he's getting a call.
Yep.
He's getting a call, right? And that's just the way that we had to swallow that pill. But to think that the Chiefs are all of a sudden reinventing the wheel and the NFL's fixed, I
don't buy that.
Yeah. I don't buy that at all.
But there is I will say it's just amazing that I've not thought of the point that you just mentioned. You're right. I mean, the teams that I grew up rooting for are not teams that were, now I will say this, we're both Duke fans, okay? Everybody that knows you and I or everyone that's a Carolina
that's
fan.
That's right. They're
going to
say
we
get all the
same way we say about Tar Heels. I watched the Carolina Boston College game this weekend, and it's even with 10
Why seconds, do you think I started rooting for Duke? Because I wanted to be on the right side of that for once in a while.
So we do have that going for
us. Yeah, absolutely.
Right? And so
I was tired of getting shafted in the stick up our ass.
That is the one team that we have that we can sit here and honestly admit they get some calls. They do.
Why?
Because they're freaking
good. Because they're good.
Exactly. And that was the point you're making is right. I remember going to Hornet games when I was in high school, and I could not stand Isaiah Thomas because he got every call. I could not stand Karl Malone. He got every call. The other reason I couldn't stand him is because we couldn't stop him.
That's right. You couldn't beat him.
They were so good that they didn't need the calls, but they still got them. But damn, we couldn't stop him. Michael Jordan,
obviously. I hated the Bulls.
Yep. I did.
I hated the Lakers.
Yep.
But I respected the hell out of them because they were just good. And sometimes that's okay. Damn, they're good.
Yep.
I mean, and that's what Mahomes has been. You look at his first 7 years, he's not been to the AFC championship.
It's crazy.
He's won 3 Super Bowls. He's lost 1 in 4, you know, and he's been to three others.
Here's what's crazy about Mahomes. First of all, you're right. Coming into this weekend, I thought the Bills were going to finally get over the hump. I really did. I thought Kansas City was really good, obviously. I think it's the best defense they've had in the Super Bowl run. I really do. And Spagnuolo, he's the best defensive coordinator in football.
Well, the blitz that he had at the end of the game to get in Josh Allen's face immediately.
Yeah, he got him out of the
Allen
pocket.
Didn't have a time to even take a step, and the corner's on him.
Yep.
I mean, we knew that he was going to blitz. We just didn't know where from.
Right.
And neither
right
did the Bills.
Yep.
So the fact that the Bills are in spread, right, is again out coached in that situation. There needs to be a tight max protect formation that this team has in order to protect, and you have to win your one-on-ones. You know they're going to blitz. Right now your one-on-one matches have to win. AJ Brown, guess what, or you fill in the blank, whoever it is you're using for the Bills at that point, you have to win those one-on-one matchups, right? And that's just, I mean, that's just the way it was going to be. And you knew that he was going to blitz. And that's the reason why a blitz is so impactful. It's not necessarily to create a sack. It's to create timing mismatches, right, or physical mismatches. And that's exactly what Spagnuolo did. And why I say this has nothing. The teams were equally matched. Like I said that earlier. This was all about Andy Reid and his coaching staff and situational football, knowing when and why to do what they did. And they executed.
Yeah.
They executed better than the Bills in those crucial situations. And that's the reason they're going to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, Andy Reid, Spagnuolo, I mean, they are so well coached, so well prepared, and they've got the experience to go along, and they think they're going to win. They never get worried. You and I kept saying,
it's
really
nice to have Mahomes.
And then you've got him.
Yeah.
And listen,
he's the X factor.
You can say whatever you want to. And yesterday, I think there was two different plays. One of them was a touchdown run. The other one, I believe, hell, it might have been both of his touchdown runs. But yesterday, there was a couple times where I felt Mahomes usually would have slid or did his little fake whatever. But yesterday, he put his head down and he freaking ran as hard.
It was almost like, screw you guys. You think I'm going to slide? I'm coming at you.
Exactly.
And this is the championship. And I have to play my ass off.
That's what, right?
I'm selling out. I'm selling out in this game.
You're sitting here telling me that I'm trying to draw this and do this. Let me show you something.
He even admitted that, though.
Well, he did. He said maybe I shouldn't have did the one last week. But still.
So instead of him doing it, Kelsey does it instead in the end zone.
Right.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, and that's why people don't like this team. They're good. They're arrogant. They're flashy. And they know how to play the game.
Well, here's something that's pretty interesting. So, obviously, they're going for the three-peat, which has never been done in the NFL. This will be the first Super Bowl out of the three that they've been the favorite. They were underdogs against San Francisco last year and beat them in overtime.
Mm-hmm.
And they were underdogs against Philadelphia when they beat them in 23, I believe it was. So this will be their first time as favorite. Now, when I say favorite, it's been anywhere between 1 and 2 points. But nonetheless, they're a favorite. So they're going to come in without that underdog mentality. But let me tell you something that these games this weekend showed me. So if, you know, and 10 years from now, I'm going to be a GM of an NFL team, right? And you'll be on my staff, I'm sure, somewhere along the way. It just depends on how much you argue with me between now and then. But there's a few things this year that I've really learned that if I was a general manager of an NFL football team, I would have in place in how we're moving forward. The first one, which luckily turned out to work out for the Panthers, but the first thing, and you would argue, you and I argued about this freaking a million times, is you always said Bryce Young's too short, yada, 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 yada.
No, what I've said, he's not the impact player that some of these other quarterbacks
are. Okay, but you also felt
it had nothing to do with his size.
He was too short.
I thought he was too small to play the position.
Small, short, yeah. But you did. I mean, that was you harped on that quite a bit. He's 6 foot, soaking wet, if he even is.
He's 5'10". He's the shortest quarterback to ever play the position in modern day football.
He's taller than Kyler Murray, isn't he?
No.
They're
close, but Kyler Murray got him by a quarter of an inch.
All right, so regardless.
I looked this up.
Regardless, they're short. Like, I'm 5'9", right? So I'm not tall. They're basically my height.
Yeah.
So what I learned watching the first six games, even though Bryce came back and had a hell of a great year, I think Bryce is going to be fine. Mm-hmm. I always have thought he was going to be fine, although the beginning of the Panther year, I definitely started finding myself coming off that train a little bit because he played so badly. But my point is this. If I'm a general manager of an NFL football team and I need a quarterback, I'm not drafting a dude under 6'2". I don't give a damn what he does in college. I don't give a shit what he runs the 40 in. I'm not drafting a dude under 6'2". Because of what you just said, small quarterbacks have an issue. Now, Bryce, and this was my argument on Bryce, a lot of the things that that short quarterbacks have issues with, like batted balls and things like that, Bryce doesn't have that issue. So I think Bryce is going to be one of the...
He also can't throw to windows that Josh Allen can. Why? Well, because he has to wait for that window to come open.
He can still throw those passes. He just ain't going to get it there at 100 miles an hour.
Well, he has to put some touch on it. And the longer the ball is in the air in the NFL, and I showed you a couple of times where a guy just gets a hand on a receiver, or the ball's thrown just a slightly, and he has to kind of hesitate to wait or catch the ball behind him. The defenses are... Whoo, they're on you like
they are. And I think Bryce is going to be an exception to my new 6'2" rule, but I'm not taking a quarterback. Now, in this draft this year, Cam Ward, 6'2", Shedeur Sanders, 6'2". You know, all these quarterbacks in this draft are pretty much right. But here's my point. So that's my first rule if I'm a general manager. After watching these games this weekend, it drove home something else. And let me, we watch these games together. In the Philadelphia-Washington game, Jalen Hurts had 3 rushing touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
Saquon, 3 rushing touchdowns. That's 6 touchdowns rushing between your quarterback and your running back, mm-hmm. right?
Well, 3 of those were the bush push, you know, the...
Yeah, but still, I mean, Hurts also was 20 for 28 for 246 yards and a touchdown. Yeah. So
he threw a couple of great timely passes.
He threw one when he was on the run that you couldn't have placed it more. You know, so that game, you had 6 combined touchdowns between the QB and the running back, yep. and he threw for 246 yards. Yep. In the Kansas City game, Mahomes had 2 rushing touchdowns, right? And then even on the other side, and this is nothing I had a problem with the Bills. I'm going to get to my point, but Cook was cooking. Cook was lighting the Chiefs up. Mm-hmm. They couldn't stop him. But during the game, we kept saying, where is he? Why mm-hmm. is he not on the field? We must have said that 10 times. And going back and looking at the numbers, he had 13 rushes only. That's it. 3 catches only. He was tearing. Kansas City had no answer for him.
Swing passes. He was faster.
Exactly.
He was running through the line of scrimmage. I don't know if he got hurt.
No, he said he was fine.
Those are things that they say because they don't really know the nicks that you get throughout the game where he might have been telling the trainer something different. But anyways,
he didn't
get nearly enough carries.
And he wasn't in at all on the last 6 plays. Right. So that I don't understand that at all because he was giving Kansas City all they could ask for. But my point is still, even in that game, you know, when you look at the rushing TDs, Cook had 2 Ds, Mahomes had 2 Ds. We saw quarterbacks this weekend, Josh Allen is always this, that not only get it done with their arm, but they get it done with their feet. Jaden Daniels, who didn't have a great game this weekend, you know, they were losing that left guard really hurt them. And look, they had a great
season. They were outmatched by the Philadelphia Eagles up front.
Their magic ran out.
The Eagles were a better football team. The only chance that they had if Jaden Daniels had a magical game.
Yeah, right? Or Philly just turned the ball over, which they're
going to do. That's the magic of running the football, my friend.
That's my point. Listen, we always say in football, you say this, you have to be good on both lines, and you have to be able to run the ball, and you have to be able to stop the run. Well, the NFL now, that's still true, but it's a lot harder these days because now it's not just the running back you have to stop, it's the quarterback. And when officiate these games where the quarterback's not really a running back when he is running the ball and he can slide on it, it's got to be so incredibly frustrating on defense
mm-hmm.
to match up with these quarterbacks. And in 5-10 years, there's not going to – we talked about this the other day – there will no longer be a Matt Stafford. There won't be any the guy.
Tom Brady's.
They're gone. There won't be those guys anymore because the kids now that are 5, 6, 7 years old, the coaches now are going, this is the best athlete on the team. Get back.
That's been happening for quite some time. And the origination of that or the modern day origination came with Mike Vick, right? So that goes back to the Atlanta Falcons when they drafted him and, you know, just not having an answer for that 11th player. Typically, when you run the football, you know, you do drills called 9-on-7. There's a reason for that. There's a safety that's unblocked and you have a quarterback on your offense, right? So the defense is going to always have an advantage. What the running quarterback brings value to is that now, instead of playing 9-on-7, it's 11-on-11 football. You have receivers that are going to be able to spread the box. You have a fullback running back that is going to take one way, and you have the quarterback that has the ability to run the other way or follow.
Yeah.
Right. So it makes defenses honest. They can't fly downhill. They have to play gap sound football. And all defenders want to do what? One thing.
Knock the hell out of
them. They want to make the play.
Yeah.
They all want to make the play.
Yeah.
But in order to make the play, sometimes you have to be selfish. Right. So sometimes they get out of their lanes and they over pursue or, you know, whatever it might be. What a quarterback that has the ability to run the ball, he makes you play honest on the backside and the front side you can't just pin your ears back and go try to make the play.
Yeah.
Right. So it's created fairness with the running game. And this is what we're seeing. And that's the reason why. Not because if Bryce Young was too small, because Bryce Young didn't have the athleticism that these other quarterbacks do. He may be able to elude guys when everybody rushes deep, but he doesn't have the ability to line up in an eye and run a quarterback lead. He's not going to be that guy ever.
Which was, by the way, not every quarterback's going to have that.
They will. I mean, you're seeing it. DJ, we just saw 4 teams in the championship game. All of them had the ability to do that.
That's true.
All of them run that. And not just them. The best of those guys didn't even make it past the Chiefs last week with Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry. In the modern day NFL, it is transitioned to college football. Tim Tebow and your running back better be that guy that can carry the ball. The reason why Tim Tebow didn't make it, couldn't throw. You have to be able to throw the ball and run the ball. You have to be a dual threat. And if you don't have that dual threat guy, you're always going to be playing behind the eight ball. And that's, to me, the reason why eventually Bryce Young is going to hit his peak, because every team in the NFL evolves and gets better equally through the draft. You all have the ability to do that. Now, I might be able to pick before you, but I'm still going to have the ability to get better at the same rate you are, you know, until we hit a certain point. The difference makers are when everything's equal, right, is that position, right? Is that position and that position only. And we're seeing that, we just saw the four best in the game do it. Joe Burrow is going to have to change his style, and they're going to have to change their offense. Well, now, I know he's a great passer, and he lit it up. But again, it goes back to what I'm saying. Mixon is a great running back for the Bengals.
Well, that he went to the Texans.
Yeah, whoever their running back is now, right? He had a hell of a season. But he's not the same type of player that these other guys are. But Burrow, and that's the reason why they're not going to find themselves in that position, because they're going to max out and defenses are going to be able to key on the run.
Well, I will say this, I wasn't trying to make it a Bryce Young conversation, but with that being said, you know, I'm not going to sit here. I'm not saying that I believe that if the Panthers fix their defense and they fix whatever, I think Bryce Young could be a great quarterback. Who knows if he wins?
He will. Super Bowl. He'll be a good one, but he's not going to be
Joe Burrow.
He's not. He's
Joe Burrow's unbelievable. He could totally win a Super Bowl. He's already been to one.
He's never going to beat. If the Panthers have the best team they have, with the best defense and the best offensive line, he's still not going to. How's he going to match up against the Eagles?
Well, I'll say this: the Eagles and the Chiefs, the two teams in the Super Bowl, barely beat the Panthers and Bryce Young this year.
Oh my gosh!
Barely.
Are we even trying to compare a regular meaningless season?
But
game
what I'm
to
saying what is, he played his ass off against both teams, and both teams had things on the line at that time. So I'm not comparing it to a Super Bowl. I'm not comparing it to a playoff. I'm not saying that. What I am saying though is, in a game in regular season this year against both those teams, he played his ass off, and we were a couple calls away from winning. One was a Thielen catch that should have been. But regardless, my point of the whole thing is a GM, it goes back to back up what you're saying. If I'm a GM now, I wouldn't take Bryce Young. I would take the dude that's 6'2 or taller who can run the ball and nail a linebacker.
Yeah, and the height to me is kind of, I mean, that's a non-factor.
He's figured out how to handle that. He has his whole.
I mean, I know, but it's not even just the height. You're using the measurement.
And Bryce is a very elusive runner. He does a great job running, but he's not going to, what you said, if you need that yard, he ain't going to be able to bowl the linebacker over and get it like Cam Newton could.
Yeah,
like,
I understand. But I guess my pushback is, my hesitation is to your, you know, where we would have a trouble seeing eye to eye with you being the GM and me being the head pro scout, would be that, why does 6'2 matter when 6'1 not? Why does 6'2 matter and 6' not?
Because
if the guy can play and he can run the ball and he can be a dual threat, that's what matters. It doesn't matter.
Because of what you said earlier, you would be contradicting yourself, because what you just said, Bryce, you said the shortest quarterback.
So he better be great at running the ball.
Okay, but guess what? In college, there's a lot of those dudes that we could point out that are great. Amani Edwards from App State was great at doing that. You can find
but he couldn't throw the ball.
Okay, well, that's my point.
You have to do it all.
But if you're 6 foot tall,
you have to make up for it in some other way.
But you might be able to run the hell out of you. Like Melrose, a great example.
Okay.
You saw Milrose. I sent it to you. Milrose tape this
weekend.
He looks
like a beast.
Dude, the dude looks like a Greek god.
He better learn how to play running back, because he can't throw.
Correct. So he's 6'3". He's 6'3". He's a big dude. Just in college, right, there was games you could say where he was just a 10 out of a 10. There's games you sit there and go, dude can't throw the ball. He's got arm strength, but he doesn't.
Consistency matters.
Whatever it is.
Consistency matters.
So I would not touch him in the first or second round. Now, I would bet you right now he's going to go in the first two rounds, because somebody's going to take a shot on him just because of the athletic. I mean, the dude's a stud. And
Terrell Pryor 2.0.
Yeah, and you know, a team.
Remember Terrell Pryor?
I do.
Ohio State?
I do.
6'5", incredible athlete. Couldn't throw the pass into the ocean.
He actually turned into a decent tight end.
He was a receiver, like a tight end slash. I mean, he was a utility guy.
Yeah.
That Jalen Milroe better be learning how to do that real quickly, because he's not a quarterback in the NFL that's going to have the accuracy and consistency. So my point to this, with going back to Young and all these other quarterbacks.
Yeah, because the main point of the conversation is just that this weekend what we saw was the future of this, and it's been going this way,
of the NFL.
Like, right. The quarterbacks are going to have to be able to run and throw and also deliver a freaking hit when you need a yard. And we can name Bryce, Kyler Murray, guys who I think are good quarterbacks. I think Bryce is going to have a damn good career. However, you're right. Like, in when the rubber hits the road, Bryce may be able to pick up that yard in a different way. He may be able to throw a perfect slant pass. He may be able to, you know, whatever the case may be. Panthers want to run the ball. Maybe they just give it to the running back like most teams did in the old days. But it's going to be a hell of a lot better when your quarterback can line up and go get the yard. Jalen Hurts does it one way with the tush push.
Who do you stop?
That's exactly. And you know, that's the thing. When Cam Newton last week, when it was after the Baltimore Ravens Bills game, when Andrews dropped that pass, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone saw it. He should have caught it. There's no argument there. And Cam didn't argue it either. Cam said, of course, he should have caught the pass. But then Cam had a valid point, and you and I talked about this yesterday, where Cam didn't like the play call. Now, we can sit here and go, well, I don't know what you didn't like about it. It was a great play call. If Andrews catches the ball, it's a damn touchdown.
If the play was executed, there was nothing wrong with the play call. He was wide open.
I agree.
Wide open.
I agree.
If the coordinator, that's all you can do. I design a play that's going to get a guy wide open. It's up to him whether he catches it or drops it.
If he catches
it. Or whether he throws it accurately or he throws it inaccurately.
Correct.
I mean, that's all you can do. There's nothing wrong with
the play. If I'm a point guard and I hit you and you're sitting there with nobody in your face at three and you miss it, that's
wide open.
Exactly.
You're missing wide open shots.
You just missed it. I didn't get an assist, but you right.
Missed tackle. I design a blitz. I have a free hitter right in the hole and he gets juked out and misses. My blitz worked.
Yep.
I don't have the guy that can make the play.
Exactly. So
or didn't make the play. Even though he can't. He just didn't.
And so Cam said that. Cam said, obviously, if the guy catches the ball, which he should have, everyone was. But Cam said the reason I didn't like it, and I thought that was interesting, and it goes back into this whole quarterback issue, is that when you roll Lamar Jackson out, when you roll a running quarterback out, you're now you're only giving them a third of the field to get the job done. And these guys that can run, when you let them drop back and they've got the whole field, now they got, okay, I can pass it here. I can run here. Mm-hmm. The pressure's come here. I can go this way. And so when you roll them out,
loosen the defense up because you're not dictating, you're rolling the pocket to one third of the field, right? Yeah. And
which I just thought it was a very interesting point by Cam.
There's a time and place for that, but yeah, go ahead.
I just thought it was an interesting point by Cam, who, by the way, is one of the best running quarterbacks in the history of the NFL. He's one of the best quarterbacks. I think he's the toughest quarterback in the history of the NFL. I also think that when it comes to knocking the shit out of linebackers and safeties and corners, he probably has more of those than any quarterback in the NFL. So when I heard him say that, I thought to myself, first, I thought what you said was, oh, shit, it wasn't a bad play call. If Andrews catches it, it's a touchdown. But when you are calling plays for these quarterbacks as a play caller, I would think that, number one, what a luxury to have a quarterback like that, that you can call a play knowing that if it's not there, they can take off and still do it with their feet. But also, when you are calling plays, I would always think that would pop up in my head before I called a play that is going to roll the quarterback out to a certain where I am going to take away. Now, there's times
it's
for
an unstoppable route if it's executed. And it was executed, except it was dropped.
Yeah.
Lamar did everything he could. It's called a load pass, you know, 36 load, whatever you're going to, whatever the offense decides to do. It's flood. You're flooding the zone quickly. It looks like a run. You're out in the flat right now. Defenses are on their heels because they're, you know, threatened by the run and don't know whether to stop the run. And all of a sudden, oh, they have to react. And the guy's passed him. And from me to you is wide open in the NFL.
Yep.
Andrews was from you to the wall, wide open even before the ball was thrown with touch. And he just dropped it.
Yeah, he did. But
dropped it. It was nothing wrong with the play.
Well, my point of that story wasn't really the play. I just wanted to make sure I set that up so people didn't think I was saying the play was a bad call because it wasn't.
Yeah.
But I just thought Cam's thought process just on that kind of play in general, not even that situation, but in general, from one of the best running quarterbacks in the game ever, in my opinion.
But the reason why we call that play, and this is what he should know as well, is because you have a dual threat quarterback that you're putting pressure on the defense on making a decision. Do I take the quarterback and come to him and allow the guy in the flat to be wide open where he has to throw the ball? It's like stopping the ball on a fast break in basketball.
But you have to
stop the point guard.
But if he's lining up in shotgun, let's just say.
Okay.
Same play, line up in shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
He's still going to put a shitload of pressure on the defense regardless with his feet because they know as soon as he breaks either way, they still have to make that same decision. Now he's got the whole field to deal with, whereas
it's hard to beat one-on-ones individually. That's a schematic play that's going to get you in the flat right now with the design of the play, right? It's built for 3 yards. That's it. you know, on I think they needed two, and he was in the end zone for three. It's built for 3 to 4 yards, sometimes five if he turns in and makes. If Andrews in a perfect world was in the middle of the field and it's third and one, they call that play, he catches it and turns up, he probably gets eight or nine, right? All he need to do is catch the ball and fall down because he was a yard in the end zone. So the play design, the scheme of that play is designed for that. So I think Cam in a perfect, in a different scenario, you know, maybe with more field to work with, absolutely. But when you're in the red zone, you have the goal line and the back of the end zone as an extra defender. Schematically, I'm going to look for the advantage. Mm-hmm. If I'm in the middle of the field on the 20-yard line, guys can run by you. Now Cam able to use his legs from the middle of the field. It's a completely different story, mm-hmm. right? So I think both can be true, but in this situation, because of where they're at, schematically, they had to create that offense. And I think that's where, you know, red zone matters.
But let me ask you this. If we asked Mahomes, Josh Allen.
They just ran that play.
Jalen Hurts
did the same play.
No, not again.
On fourth and one,
but if we asked,
rolls out on the same exact play.
But if we, when he threw it to the running back at the end of the game, Green?
No, he did it twice. When he rolled out in the very first play, very first series on fourth and one, he rolls out to the right. Everybody's under center. Looks like he can run. Said Hunt, he rolls out to the right. There's a guy in the flat that the cornerback has to make a decision. Do I take him or do I take Mahomes? He runs with the receiver like he should, and Mahomes just continues to trail.
Well, I mean, he ended the game on the same play to
Perrine. It's the same type of thing.
But that was obviously not a goal line.
That was a play designed for the running back to sneak out Mahomes rolls out to one third of the field and hits him right in the flat.
I just wonder, you know, and again, this is just after hearing Cam talk about that, because I thought his reasoning behind it was very well thought out. And obviously he knows a hell of a lot more about it than I do. But I just wondered if you asked like the four quarterbacks this weekend, if you're on the 5 yard line or whatever, would you prefer in a, you know, obviously they could say, well, it depends on what the defense. I mean, there's a lot of different.
Depends on where you're at. Depends on what players you have.
But I would bet.
Who you have as a receiver. You know, what type of offense you have, what kind of running back you have, and what kind of quarterback you have.
I would bet most of the quarterbacks, though, would probably prefer.
They would all run the roll. They would all run 36 load.
On that play?
On that play. In that situation. They would run something to that matter. Run something to that fact. Because of having the end zone. Now, if you're in the middle of the field, like I said earlier, you know, now you have the ability to go both ways because the offense, the receivers can push in man coverage, you know, and then you can go and escape. You have the ability to use both sides of the field and use the crossing routes and things like that. So there's a lot more opportunity in the middle of the field than there is in the end zone. Well, you know, when you're on the 3 yard.
I tell you, you know, it really, having the quarterbacks that we have now, it really does make the game. Number one, it makes it a lot more fun to watch. I mean, when these guys take off, I mean, when Jalen Hurts takes off, when Mahomes takes off, you know, and they all have their different styles. I mean, those, you know, Hurts, Allen, big dudes, you know, Mahomes is kind of in between, you know, Lamar.
Mahomes just gets what he needs.
Exactly.
And he has that can't catch. It's like Jerry Rice, can't catch me speed. He's not going to roll away from anybody and blow the socks off because he's not going to make your eyes jump when you're watching him. But you can't tackle him.
Right.
He's elusive. He's shifty. He's creative. Right.
He knows where he's trying to get.
And if
he's trying to get a first down, he's not worried about trying to take it to the house or
situational football.
Yeah.
Andy Reid, Bill Belichick, you know, guys that have played, you know, with those guys or with those types of offensive coordinators and head coaches are situationally better than everybody else. I'm telling you, Bill Belichick situationally is the greatest of all time. And the fact that he has Tom Brady and they know exactly what to do. Mike March was like that, you know, with Kurt Warner. He also had great receivers and running backs that you could attack the entire field. You know, for a guy like that, that's where you want to keep the guy in the pocket, but you have to worry about the blitz, but you also have to be ready when that blitz comes and things happen where a receiver, you know, has to know that blitz is coming and he has to cut his route and go 5 yards. So the blitz puts a lot of pressure on a lot of different players, and especially the quarterback and the receivers, that communication that you see. Oh, he's coming.
Yeah.
They're communicating. Oh, he looks like he's coming. He's coming. So eyes on me. If he comes, it's a hot route right now. Throw him, snap that ball, kind of like in the Wedding Crashers. Hot route, throw him the ball, right?
Yeah.
So that's what has to happen, and it creates your P's and Q's. It make you be on your P. Belichick had all those guys aware. That's why he didn't really care about the greatest talent. He had smart guys, Edelman,
Vrabel.
He used Vrabel as a tight end. I mean,
there was 10 touchdowns,
but he was a smart player. That's why those things matter in those situations, that we all have to see the same thing without being able to talk about it. We all have to see that, and you have to prepare for those things.
Well,
and that's why Andy Reid, you know, in that situation overmatched.
He's always a step ahead, man.
He overmatched the Bills because, you know, McDermott, you know, great. They have a good, he's a defensive minded guy.
Do you keep McDermott if you're the Bills?
Yeah, I mean, McDermott.
It sounds like a stupid question.
I think I would, if I'm looking at people to put blame on in that game, you know, I mean, it's really hard to put it on one guy. But again, situational football, you can't run quarterback sneak five. Yeah, that can't be your only go-to play.
Yeah.
You have a 6'5", 250-pound quarterback where if you spread the field and you're going to put him out there in the gun,
he's going to get yard.
Now you have a head of steam where you're snapping him the ball. There's no handoff. It's go, right? Versus under center, where those guys up front are really not going to control the line of scrimmage against those other manimals across, because those guys are damn good.
They are.
The Chiefs, they're explosive, they got a damn good line, and they get off on the ball. So I put them in space a little bit more and make them make a flat space.
Joe Brady, you know, he's one of the hot names. He has been for like a couple years. And look, he's obviously a smart play caller. I'm not saying that. But I do. I think Andy Reid and Spagnuolo, they showed why they are the best in the business. And they are. They're the best in the business.
It's the Brady-Belichick combination.
Yeah.
It's just 2.0.
Yeah, it is.
Right? It is.
They've got – and here's the thing, too. Kansas City offensively is as good now as they've been all year because they now have a healthy Pacheco and Hunt, who's been great since they picked him up. Hollywood Brown missed the entire year, comes back at the beginning of the playoffs, and he's had big – I mean, yesterday, I think he had the first two or three catches. Fast as hell, has a whole other element. So they've got their running game which I questioned. You got Mahomes, obviously. Now they've got Hollywood Brown added to their wideout receiver room, which Worthy has already been a great rookie. You've got Kelsey. Gray comes up big always.
They have every level that's needed to be an explosive offense. And they have a great play caller that knows situational football, and they have a quarterback that understands situational football and is able to execute when the moment seems too bright for some.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the reason why they are a great offense. They can threaten you deep with Worthy and speed. They can run the ball with Pacheco or Hunt. And they also have the ability to play action with Kelsey.
Yep.
Right. And Kelsey can be part of the passing game, a part of the running game. On the run with Mahomes, where he put his head down, Kelsey was the lead block and knocked the safety back into the end zone on that play. Yep. So, you know, it was a little counter tray where the tackle kicks out, the H-back comes around. Kelsey was the lead blocker on that. You know, he was the rap guy and leads through the hole and cleans it out. Yeah. And Mahomes follows 11-on-11 football in the red zone. Yeah. You have to be able to run the football in the red zone. You can't get it to 4th and inches or 4th and 1 and expect to, you know, win every one of those battles unless you have those type of dogs up front like the Eagles do.
Well, you know, and some of the, like Saquon, who had just another crazy game.
Saquon's the MVP of this league.
I mean, he's unbelievable. I mean, unbelievable. But he also yesterday had two or three blocks that he knocked the dust off the linebacker.
Warner.
That kept two of them Hurts completed nice passes on. Mm-hmm. But that's the thing. Like, even these guys that are superstars, Kelsey for Kansas City, Barkley for the Eagles, AJ Brown and even Devontae Smith for the Eagles, these other players are blocking their asses off. They're contributing even when they're not maybe having huge games. AJ Brown really hasn't had, I mean, he had a good game this weekend, but before that he hasn't done much, but he's still out there blocking his ass off, and he's still, you know,
the reason reads why, a book the, now. The, well, the, re, yeah, the reason why, you know, those guys are great players is they have, I don't want to call it the ability to turn it on and turn it off, but they're selling out a little bit more. And that's the difference between playoffs and regular season. So when you sit there and tell me the Panthers are hanging in there with the Chiefs, the Chiefs aren't selling out like they are in the playoffs.
Well, I get that. So don't, paint me in that corner.
Yeah. But so my point
is just that Bryce Young played great against the two teams.
They have the ability to run by you.
We could have won either game, is all.
Yeah. They have the ability to run by you or to be more physical than you. And, you know, A.J. Brown is a beast. I mean, 6'3", 230 pounds. And, you know, I mean, like I said, he can run by you on the pass that, you know, that was down the sideline. Yep. And, you know, the DB slapped him off and went by him. If that ball's a little, you know, Hurts throws it a little bit in front of him, he's still running because he has the speed to run. But he also has the speed to knock you over and grab you and hold you.
Even Devontae Smith, who's tiny, he's out there blocking his ass off, you know. And so, you know, Frank and I are going to do a Super Bowl show next week where we're going to really dive into it. We're also going to have a handicapper or two on the show with us. So we're going to take a look at the Super Bowl probably from a different lens than most.
We haven't talked about the Eagles Redskins game yet.
I know, because really the second game was the game everyone was pumped for anyway. The Redskins had a great year. I mean, look, as a Giants fan, it sucks that we've got Jaden Daniels in our conference, because the kid in 2 or 3 years is going to be the best quarterback in the NFL. I believe it. And I believe their new ownership group, Dan Quinn is a head coach, who I got like 17 texts yesterday, by the way, that I look like Dan Quinn. And then during the Buffalo game, I had more that said I look like McDermott. I see both. I can see it in both. My dad looked more like Dan Quinn, I think. I wish I had both of their bank accounts. That would be great. And jobs for that matter. But we're going to break the Super Bowl down, but we're going to do it from a handicapping standpoint. We're going to talk cooking. We're going to talk bourbon
parties.
So our Super Bowl show that we're going to do is going to be fun. And obviously we're going to talk about the game, but we're going to do it from a standpoint that's not just talking about, you know, AJ Brown against McDuffie and this quarter. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk some of that, but it's all going to basically tie into gambling. And
it's going to be two guys and, you guys out there listening, shooting the shit and, you know, having a little fun and,
yep,
you know, just kind of talking about our Super Bowl experiences. I've been fortunate enough to play in one and,
yep,
you know, obviously we come here quite a bit when we watched them. I've probably been to half of them here at your house because you put on such a great spread. And
I've been lucky enough to where I'm going to knock on wood here because I haven't figured out my bet yet, but I don't think I've lost the game, the Super Bowl bet in, I can't remember. And I remember the streak.
Picking the team?
Yeah.
And I think since the Rams lost to the Patriots?
That was when the streak started because I took the Patriots getting like 14 points. What? Even though you're my boy, I thought you would win the game, but no. I thought the Patriots would keep it close. I wish I would have bet them on the money line. I would have hit them run. But
listen, biggest spread in NFL history.
Yeah. And
for the Super Bowl.
That's why I took it. But anyway, that Super Bowl show will be next week. It'll be fun. If you haven't checked out, we did a bonus one this week, which we're doing another series called Charlotte Sport Originals, where we're going to interview somebody that's in Charlotte, has been here for 20, 30 years, has kind of seen it all, whether it be on the radio side, the TV side, the athlete side, the
business side,
the business side. And we're really just going to have a conversation with them and kind of put a timeline together and tell stories. And so we did our first one with Mark Yarbrough. And it'll be out.
Kind of the history of WFNZ, really.
Yeah, yeah. And it's out today, and it'll be out today. I don't know what day you're listening to this, so I probably shouldn't say it's out today, but it's out. And but it was really, really fun and interesting. And it flew by. We covered a lot of stuff. But if you were and are, you know, a fan of WFNZ, or if you've been in this town for 20, 30 years, I think you're going to enjoy this series. But I think the one that we kicked it off with Yarbrough came out great. So check that out if you can. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. I want to talk a little bit of college basketball real quick, and a couple things there, and then we'll get out of here. But before we do that, I do want to ask you this, and I want quick answers. All right. We're not going to discuss it. Quick answers.
This is like, I'm on a hot seat.
You're on a game show.
I'm on the hot seat.
Right?
Are we doing this now or when we come back?
No, we'll do it right now real quick before we go to break. Who has the best offensive line? Eagles. Kansas City. All right. Defensive line.
Eagles.
Pass rush.
Kansas City.
Receivers.
Kansas City.
Running back.
Eagles.
Quarterback.
Kansas City.
Special teams.
Wash.
Who wins?
Eagles.
Huh. Okay.
Running the ball, stopping the run. There's no recipe to beat that. You throw the ball, there's one good thing that can happen, a lot of bad things.
Yeah.
Now, Eagles are built 7 touchdowns to run the ball.
You're right.
Stop the run.
I'm not sure who I'm going to pick yet. I'm going to have a hard time doing that. I'll give you a couple stats, too, before we go to break. The favorite has won 36 of 58 Super Bowls, okay? but the underdogs have won 10 of the past 17. Okay, so they're on a run. Dogs overall are 29, 27, and 2 in Super Bowls. All right. However, like I said, 10 of the past 17 Super Bowls, the underdog has won outright. So this game's
that's
almost.
That's a Steve Merrill stat right there.
Well, I like
he'll tell you if you're going to take a team, you might as well take it on the money line.
Yeah.
Because the team that you take usually wins outright.
Yep. And in this game, man, I'll tell you what, I started studying it last night after the game and looked at it this morning. I still am not sure who I'm going to take. Like, I need more time. So luckily we'll do that on the Super Bowl show next week. Right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back on Suit Up Sports.
It's time to suit up. Here's your host, DJ The Suit Stout.
Welcome back to Suit Up Sports. I'm your host, DJ The Suit Stout, along with 10-year NFL vet Frank Garcia. At some point, I'm about to figure out something else to say there. Like
Mad Max.
You know, like, you know.
Call me the Mad Max. That's what you used to
Mad
call me.
Mad Max.
When you first hired me at WFNZ.
That is totally why we hired you. Yeah. So we could call you that, although that will ruffle feathers, I'm sure.
Call me the Gimp.
Call you the Gimp, but I'm limping worse than you now after these two back surgeries, so I don't know if I could call you
call
that.
Call me old man.
I mean, I've got plenty that I can rattle off right now. I just want to be strategic as to when I use
it. They have to be appropriate as well.
Yeah, I got to be careful. But we wanted to just do a quick segment here at the end of this podcast. You know, obviously we've been mainly football so far, you know, in the last few weeks. College basketball is obviously huge. In North Carolina, but also, you know, right now it's right in midseason. So there's this weekend alone, there were some great basketball games.
Well, March Madness is right around the corner.
I know football. It's 7 weeks away. Yeah, I'll be in Vegas and I can't wait.
It's the thing I look forward to next after football's over.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's hard for me to watch college basketball nowadays.
Well,
because I don't have the skin in the game, I don't know any of the players. You start kind of as we start getting closer to March Madness, you start kind of, okay, well, let me get my gambling in line.
Yeah.
So let me start studying these games and these teams a little bit more. Who has the best point guards? Who has who plays the best defense? Who plays in the best conference? You know, who has the best wins? You know, those type of things. And, you know, you start kind of, you know, getting an idea of where you want to put your money.
Well, it's definitely – look, I grew up in Charlotte, so I've been here my entire life. And my 22-year-old son, Connor – is a sports addict and he watches everything, and, you know, he gives me info that I don't even know. But, you know, growing up here, we never missed college basketball. I mean, listen, since the time I was probably 4 years old, there wasn't a week during college basketball season that I either was not at a UNC Charlotte basketball game. And I'm going all the way back, you know, way back, Hal Whistle days, and, you know, when Judy Rose, who ended up being the AD there.
We're talking about Charlotte.
She, Charlotte, when she coached the women's basketball.
Bobby Lutz.
All through Bobby Lutz, Jeff Mullins.
Who was before him?
Well, Jeff Mullins was a
before
great.
Before him.
I mean, they've had a – well, they had
back in the 90s. They had a with Diego Guevara, who were they ranked? Well,
Diego Guevara was with Bobby Lutz. Who's going in the UNC Charlotte Hall of Fame.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah, he deserves it too. Great guy.
Mel.
There's the one coach that I'm forgetting.
Watkins. Melvin Watkins. No, that's.
No, Melvin Watkins. Yeah, Melvin Watkins. That's what I'm trying to think of. He played Melvin UNC Watkins. Charlotte, coached UNC Charlotte, left Charlotte.
I was confusing him with the guy in the Ray Kruth murder.
Really? Let's not do that.
Isn't that Melvin Watkins too?
I don't remember.
I'm going to have to look this up. Go ahead.
But to be clear to anybody listening, it's not the same dude.
Maybe Big D can look that up for us.
Melvin Watkins was played at UNC Charlotte, goes to UNC Charlotte, did a good job.
They had a great run in the
– It got him a big paycheck at Texas A&M as head coach for
that's
a
right,
bit.
That's right. That's right.
But anyway, there wasn't a week that my dad didn't take me to either a UNC Charlotte game, or we sat, you know, in our living room at night, and we would watch the ACC basketball games of the week with Billy Pack, Packer and Pack, you know, all those games. And so, you know, I was a Duke fan, you know, I still am.
How'd you become a Duke fan? Why Duke, not Carolina or NC State? Because you seem more like, I'm just be honest with you, your personality, your dad's personality feel more like an NC State vibe.
Yeah.
Than you would I'm a definitely, Duke fan.
I would agree with that. I'm definitely a hell of a lot more redneck and country southern.
Yeah, that's right.
I agree with you. The reason I became a Duke fan was because, you know, my dad had not grown up in Charlotte, right? So when we moved here, I was 2 years old, and he was, hell, I don't know, in his 20s. But when you moved here and you're a sports fan, you had no choice. You had to pick a team.
Pick a side.
And my dad became,
well, there's three teams really to pick from back then. I mean, NC State was, they hadn't won.
The teams I was choosing between was State, because they were good back then with Val Vando and all that. I mean, when they won the national championship, I was 9 years old. Carolina, obviously. Duke was getting really good back then. That was good. Went right into the
Bobby Hurley.
Even before that, the Tommy Amaker and Dawkins and
Coach K. You know, when they hired Coach K.
Yeah, so you know they were getting good. Carolina was already obviously good. Those are the three teams, and then the other team that I really liked along with Duke was Virginia. Was because they had Ralph Sampson, who was just unbelievable and fun to watch. So my dad and I would watch college basketball religiously, and I could name every player on every team, and I didn't even watch the NBA. I never watched the NBA.
But that's the way it was back then, DJ.
Well, that's what I'm saying, and it was great, you know. Yeah.
In North Carolina, I had no idea until I started doing the radio, you know, how big basketball was here. In Tobacco Road, and you know some of the rivalries, and North Carolina, Duke, NC State, and you know the Triangle area. Then you throw in Wake Forest, and in North Carolina alone, I mean the basketball.
I mean it's a religion.
Phenomenal.
I mean,
and they used to get days off of school to watch these games.
Oh, we would sit. I remember I went to Windsor Park Elementary from third to sixth grade, and I remember the teachers. Regardless of the grade,
rolling in
TV in, and we'd put the games on starting at noon, and the rest of the day you coasted through it. And I remember my fifth grade teacher was a guy named Mr. Wells, Ken Wells, and he ended up being, you know, principal at South Mac, and then he had bigger jobs than that. Great, great dude, but went to Carolina, loved Carolina, and I hated Carolina. Back to your question, the reason I liked Duke was because I don't know what it was about the Tar Heels, but somewhere along the way when we moved here, my dad ran into some fans from Carolina. Maybe he was watching the game.
Were they wearing penny loafers and khakis?
I think they were putting nickels in their penny loafers. Yeah. But whatever it was, and I think maybe they were crapping on US or on Charlotte. I don't know, but my dad hated Carolina. So when I grew up, that was handed down to me, and it was a very easy handoff. It wasn't hard. Mm-hmm. Most of my best friends love Carolina, right? So, you know, growing up through elementary school and then Hawthorne Junior High and West Charlotte High School, all my buddies love Carolina, and I which made me hate them even more, but it also hated
me. It's definitely a blue blood state,
no doubt, and it made me hate going to school the next day if they beat us and vice versa. You know, it was that kind of passion behind college basketball. And because of the portal and now NIL, you're right, like I couldn't name five starters on three teams. This weekend I told myself that I was going to sit down and watch three or four college basketball games. There were some great games to watch. So, you know, the Duke Wake Forest game, which turned out to be a really good game. Wake Forest has got a good scrappy team.
Well, they always have. I mean, go back into
this year they're pretty legit. I mean,
Tim Duncan, one of the greatest players of all time came from.
Yeah, I mean, they've always been solid. But the last few years they've kind of fell back with Danny Manning or whatever. This guy's got them playing well, and they gave Duke all they wanted. Then I watched the second half of the Boston College Carolina game, which, you know, it's funny. Carolina, I watched some of the Stanford game before that, and Carolina could not defend an inbound play. It was the damnedest thing I've ever seen. And then you fast forward to the Boston College game, and Boston College couldn't get the ball inbound. If they could, the game's over. So in 2 weeks, the inbound play killed Carolina, and then it won them the game. And then I watched
the Auburn-Tennessee game,
which was fantastic. And then I watched some of the Louisville SMU game.
And there was a Kentucky who did they play? There was another team that they played, Houston.
Houston against Kansas.
Houston, Kansas.
I watched that too, which is another great
Houston,
game.
Houston, Kansas, right?
And I say
that all was really, that's three overtime game.
Great game. And so I say all of that because watching those games this weekend on purpose, I made myself watch them, which in the past, I wouldn't have to make myself watch them.
Well, there's nothing else to watch.
Right. Exactly.
If you're a sports fan.
And this week, we're honest, getting ready to go through it as well.
Yeah.
But I tell you what it made me realize is that there's some damn good basketball being played. Houston's really good. Kansas is really good. Duke is really good. Auburn is really good. Auburn's the best team. I know Duke beat them, but if they play again tomorrow on a neutral court, I'm going to Auburn. Unfortunately, but there's some damn good. Florida is really good. But the point that I was going to get to was this coming weekend, Duke plays Carolina. Okay. And you mentioned this earlier, you know, that is a huge rivalry. If you grew up in this area, if you moved to this area, it doesn't take long as a fan to get involved, whether it's through buddies, through work friends, whatever the case may be. And that game's coming up this weekend. Well, it used to be a huge deal, right? It still is, but not what it was. And even when one of the teams stunk, okay, it still was a big deal. It's Carolina Duke. Whoever wins that game has got bragging rights and whatever. And it's amazing how that series has worked out over the years too. I mean, a team
damn near 500.
Yeah, and a team could lose both those games and then go on to do really good in the tournament.
And they've had runs, you know, where Duke is dominated for 3 years and then, you know, swept them. And then Carolina comes back and sweeps them right back.
Yeah, I mean, Coach K's three. Last year, Carolina swept them. Yeah. You know, and so it's always fun. It doesn't matter what the team's doing coming in. Carolina right now is struggling. You know,
they're not even a top 25 team.
They're not. Now, I will say this. You know, some of their losses are to really good teams, but lately they have something's not right with that team. And when I watched that game against Boston College, the second half, and I think the second half against Stanford. Something's just not right. I don't know if it's a locker room issue. I don't know if it's a coaching issue. It might be a mixture of all of it. Because they've got some studs. Like, it ain't like they don't have players. They got players. Something just ain't clicking. Now, they're missing a big man. You know, not having Bacot. I know Bacot was there for 14 years. So when he had to leave, I know Carolina fans hated losing him after. I think when he left last year, he was 56 years old. But he could rebound. They don't have a rebounder. So that's the big problem. But my point is, I'm reading a story yesterday. And it was last night, actually. So I'm already pissed off at the Super Bowls, two teams I can't stand. So I hope it's the damn best game we've ever seen, and I hope I win every bet, and I hope the food's great because I could give it shit.
Well, we know that at least two of the three are going to be great. The food's going to be great, and we're going to have a lot to drink.
Definitely. But I'm reading this damn story, and ESPN does College Game Day for obviously football and basketball. And it's great. Like, it's one of the best produced sports shows on all of TV. And it has been for a long time. They do a great job. I'm not a Seth Greenberg fan. He drives me crazy. I didn't like him when he coached, and I don't like him when he's commentating. He also, I'll pull the curtain back a little bit. When I used to produce shows,
I remember
at FNZ and elsewhere or whatever. You know, we had a lot of great guests on, and then you had some that came on and were super great dudes. It was easy, like Kirk Herbstreit and Jay Billis. And I mean, I could go on and on. There's a lot of great dudes. Charles, I mean, there's just a lot of great dudes. Then you had some that were just dicks.
Mm-hmm.
And you knew it. You know, I mean, I remember back in the day before cell phones and stuff, you know, Bob Huggins was, I tell you what, he was a dick, but he almost did it. You just knew he had to do it. Like,
it's almost like he was
kind of funny doing it.
It was like an act.
Yeah. And when I would call him to get him on the show, he was always nice. I mean, you know, Pac-Man and him were buddies, which helped, you know, but some guys were just assholes. And I remember calling before cell phones, I would call hotels and I'd find out where these guys were staying and I'd call their rooms and
hotel roulette
or hotel bingo.
Bingo.
And I would, you know, I'd get guys doing that. You'd be amazed how many people really stayed under their real name. Right. But I remember Reggie Jackson one day, I got him, and I'm off topic now, but this is a funny story. I got him at the hotel the day of, game one of the World Series. And I forget where the World Series was, but we were going to try to get him on. And I said, "Hey, Reggie," you know, and he said, "Yeah." And I'm like, "Hey, you know, it's DJ Stout from WFNZ," whatever I said, "you know, you think you could come on?" And he goes, "You think I got time to come on and talk to you? Where are you?" And I was like, "Charlotte, North Carolina." "You think I got time to talk to you in Charlotte?" Like, just total asshole. Mm-hmm. So I was like, "All right, Mr. Jackson, thank you." And hang on. Which, you know, you get your ass kicked being a producer. When you get a good guest, man, it's the best feeling in the world.
Equivalent to getting the door slammed in your face as a salesman.
I mean, when you get a good one, man, you feel so accomplished. Mm-hmm. And when you get and you get used to the door slamming shit. I mean, Kenny Lofton was another baseball player that was always, you know, was always a pain in the ass. Dusty Baker, I had the locker room phone in San Francisco, mm-hmm. and Pac was a huge Giants fan, still is. I could call the damn locker room phone in the San Francisco Giant locker room.
Dusty.
And ask for Dusty, and they would transfer me to his – he'd come on 2 hours for a game.
Isn't that crazy how some guys are just –
Yeah, some dudes just get it, you know. And so anyway, I'm pissed off about the Super Bowl. I'm reading this story last night about game day and ESPN, and they're doing it at Duke for Carolina Duke game. As they should. There's not a bigger rivalry in college basketball than Duke Carolina. I don't want to hear it. There's just not consistently, at least. Auburn Tennessee the other day, that was a great rivalry and a great game. It ain't Duke Carolina. Don't give me. I know the SEC has
Kentucky,
19.
Louisville, Kansas
used to be, and it ain't anymore.
I mean, Florida versus Kentucky.
No, I mean, they're all going to be good games.
Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State.
None of them.
I mean, they're not football you know, rivals, but I mean,
yeah, they are football, but not basketball. You know, Florida, Georgia is a hell of a football rivalry. Michigan, Ohio State's a hell of a football rivalry. Duke, Carolina is a shitty football rivalry, but in basketball, they're the one. Game day, that's where they should be. And the story that I was reading was saying that a lot of people are pissed off that they're doing Duke, Carolina instead of Arkansas going to Kentucky. Calipari left Kentucky this offseason in kind of a whirlwind is at Arkansas. They're struggling. They've got one win in the conference. They're going to Kentucky, who's been playing great. You know, their new coach has been fantastic. So a lot of people think that game day should do that for Calipari coming back to Kentucky, which, by the way, I get. Matter of fact, if the games are on at the same exact time, I was, as a Duke fan, I still would start off watching that because I'm curious to see, are they going to boo Calipari? Are they going to cheer him? You know, like all that stuff. Cause Calipari is going to be in the hanging from the rafters at Rupp Arena. There's mm-hmm. no doubt. I mean, what he's done at Kentucky.
I mean, he's one of the great college basketball coaches.
Exactly. Yeah. So I am interested to see that. So I could see why people would think that would be on game day, and it would be, except there's one problem. Duke and Carolina are playing. So you're getting Trump. But then I go on to continue this story, and then I start really kind of looking into it. And there's anonymous sources, so who knows if it's true. Mm-hmm. In these days, you never know.
Yeah, that's the way people hide their tails behind anonymous.
Right, and there's anonymous sources, though, and some pretty good stories I read that are saying the reason that they didn't do the Kentucky game was because Seth Greenberg said, if you do that game, I'm not going. Like, I'm not going. Like, we're doing Duke, Carolina, and otherwise I'm not going. So, which I agree with.
Catered to him?
That's what the story says. Now, it could be wrong. Who knows? So I'm just telling you what I read, and I read a few different things where, you know, it says that he basically said, if we're not doing Duke, Carolina, I'm not going. So part of me goes, smart man. I mean, he coached in the ACC for a long time. He's been a commentator. So as much as I can't stand him from back in the days of producing shows, I agree with him on this. Now, I'm not saying I agree with him saying I'm not going to go to the game. It's your job. Do what you got to do. But it just,
you think it's the game of the week.
It is. And look, somebody, Carolina's not any good. You know, it doesn't matter. Duke was been no good and beat Carolina. Carolina's been no good and beat Duke when they were good. It's why it's the rivalry.
Well, I think here's what I'll say to this, you know, coming from Arizona, you know, not really being a fan of either team growing up until I got into college. And is when I became a Duke fan in the 90s. Yes, it was Leitner and Hurley and yep. Michigan. And
so you were UNLV. A Duke fan when the Panthers drafted you in 95.
I was a Duke fan.
You were already a Duke fan.
I became a Duke fan in 1990 when I went to college.
So and the Leitner.
Reason, well, the reason being is because all my buddies in college, you know, were big Michigan fans. They were big UNLV fans. Yep. And, you know, these white boys can't play. These guys can't do this. These guys can't do that. Well, I just so happen to be Hispanic, but I relate as white. I identify as white.
Well, you're not superly tall, yeah, and right, you're not.
But, you know, you white boys can't play this. And, you know, I'm a competitive guy.
Sure.
So you tell us, you know, you challenge, and I'm like, these white boys are gonna. So I took the other side.
Right. You like to argue about anything anyway.
That's right. And so yes, they can, and they're gonna show you. And this was Leitner, Hurley, and, you know, Grant Hill, who's also another white guy. But, you know, I mean, they had a team full of guys that would go out there and play hard, slap the court and play great defense. And you love to hate them.
Yep.
And they weren't backing down from anybody. So that was the reason, because Arizona was probably my team growing up. U of A.
They had great years back then, too. Lute Olson.
Yeah, Lute Olson and, you know, the Steve Kerrs and the Sean Elliotts and, you know, the Amari Stoudemire Arenas, days.
I mean, they had Gilbert Arenas.
Yeah, Gilbert Arenas. I mean, they had that. National champs. I mean, they were competing for they were one of the top four teams in the country.
Yeah.
One of the blue bloods.
Yeah.
You know, but I chose Duke when I went to college because I couldn't root for another team because I was in the Pac-10
right
at the time. So I wasn't going to root for U of A, even though quietly I still kind of wanted to pull for them.
Yeah.
And Washington basketball sucked. So I wasn't rooting for them either. But, you know, it became Duke, and they were the team that was relevant. So that's why I became a Duke fan. But, you know, the point that we were making is that, you know, when you start looking at, you know, these teams and rivalries, there used to be a lot more. And
you're right.
You look at the Big East, Georgetown, you know, when they were relevant, they've gone behind, you know, by the wayside.
Yeah, that's another game I watched this weekend. So Georgetown's coach.
St. John's, we remember Chris Mullin.
Well,
UConn.
See, and this is why
UConn's still relevant.
And that you're, without even knowing it, you're leading me into exactly what I want. Mm-hmm. So the game day story tripped me out. You know, if Seth Greenberg's the reason they do, they're great. If they were at the Kentucky game, I get it too. But don't tell me it's that Duke Carolina is not the biggest game this weekend. It's the biggest game whenever they play in basketball, period. With that being said, what I really did realize this weekend watching the games, and I also watched Georgetown at Providence, and Providence's coach a few years ago left them to go to Georgetown.
Mm-hmm.
And he's getting Georgetown back. Providence has struggled, but they've beat his ass every time they've played him. So that place was sold out in Providence. You know, the fans are going nuts, and it was a good game. Providence ended up winning the game. So I did watch that. But what I realized was this. We don't know the players like we used to.
Mm-hmm.
None of us do anymore. At least the guys that I used to know that knew like everybody.
The one and dones. It's the NIL.
Yeah, the
guys
portal. The NIL. We don't, you know, Duke's team right now, you know, half of them will be gone next year. And any good team is going through that. And then the guys that backed up those dudes are transferring so they can start. I mean, you can't keep up with it. But the basketball that's being played, every game I watched, I when it was over, I was like, damn, that was a good game. Like you watch the NBA, and this is a whole nother topic for another day, because you know I'm a Hornets fan, and you watch the NBA, and it's not good basketball. I mean, it's just who can make the most three-pointers, basically, and then in the fourth quarter, the better team starts playing defense. The college games that I watched this weekend and the ones I've watched so far this season, there's some damn good basketball being played, and there's some damn good teams, and there's some damn good coaching going on. So, for instance,
they're still running plays?
They're running plays. They're running great
setting
plays.
Setting picks, playing team basketball.
And some of these coaches, for instance, you brought up St. John's. They were great when we were growing up with, like you said, Chris Mullins and all that. Well, Rick Pitino, in his second year there, I think they got 19 wins already. And I don't have their record in front of me. I want to say they're like 19-3. I mean, they have a great record. Mm-hmm. They're ranked. They're selling out Madison Square Garden mm-hmm. for their games. He's got the buzz back. They got some studs that transferred in. And you know, you look at Auburn. I mean, what a great team. Broome is going to be the player of the year. I mean, Cooper Flagg is going to be right there with him, but Broome is unbelievable for Auburn. Auburn lost at Duke, but other than that, man, they're great.
Well, I mean, they have a great coach, too. They came from Tennessee.
Coach. And NIL really helped a guy like that who got fired from Tennessee for cheating. Well, now it's not cheating. So, it helps Rick Pitino. It helps Colin Powell. It should help all of them.
Pearl's probably one of the most underrated coaches in basketball.
No doubt. He's a great motivator. Yeah. His players love him. You know, you got Iowa State. It was good this year, but Alabama, that guy, you know, has had that. He's built that program in the last 5 years to be really good. They're 15-3. You know, one of the things that we were talking about that, you know, it used to be ACC was scattered all through the top 20, all over it.
Mm-hmm.
This year, you got Duke is the only ACC team in the top 10, mm-hmm. and they only have two in the top 25. Louisville is right there at 25. Clemson's kind of on the outside looking in.
Well, they're 28th, so you can't even consider them top 25. Yeah,
SEC has 9 teams in the top 25.
Five in the top ten.
Florida, by the way, great basketball mm-hmm. team with a great coach. So after this weekend, and you know, tonight we've got, or excuse me, this week we have NC State against Duke. NC State's been a disaster this year. You have Wake Forest.
That's disappointing because I think last year they held the bell for the ACC.
Last year,
I thought they might have a chance to win the entire thing.
NC State as a school, and you know, you mentioned me being kind of an NC State guy. Well, my mother went to high school, Jimmy Valvano, and I've got a lot of time. You know, my ex wife went to NC State. Her family mm-hmm. went to NC State. So my kids are NC State fans. Yep. So I've got a lot of ties to NC State. So I do kind of root for them. I'm not over Duke, but last year they had as good of a year as a mm-hmm. college is going to have athletically.
Yep.
I mean, basketball, football, baseball, you name it. This year it's been a struggle. They may have had to pay the devil last year for what they had, and now they're going to struggle for a while. But you know, this week you get the NC State at Duke game. Duke should handle them with no problem. Wake Forest at Louisville. This Louisville team, I've watched their last three games. This coach came in and had nothing. Louisville was awful, if you remember last year. They were freaking awful. This dude inherited garbage, and he brought kids in, and he put in a system. And I don't know if you know much about this coach, but you need to go Google him.
Louisville's
coach. He's great, and they're playing ball. They went to SMU. I watched them mm-hmm. this game and beat the hell out of SMU, who was ranked.
Mm-hmm.
But they're playing Wake Forest. That'll be a good game. That's at Louisville. Yeah, UNC starts a tough stretch now. They're at Pitt. They're at Duke. So these next five games for Carolina is pretty much going to make or break whether they make the dance or not. Right now, they're probably way on the outside. Wake is like a last four getting in, maybe. But so this week,
so Carolina's not even making the tournament this year.
Not right now.
And you're thinking this is the greatest game of the weekend.
Yes, and I'll tell you why. And I don't have the stats in front of me, but I can give.
I mean, the rivalry.
I can go give you.
It's damn near 500 right down the middle.
Yeah, and I can give you games where Duke or Carolina were bad and went in and won. You just don't know.
Not
you never
this
know.
Bad.
Yeah. I can.
I mean, I expect a close game. I expect North Carolina to play above their level and what they've been playing because it's Duke. But I expect Duke to win double digits. I bet you if you look at the line, it's a double digit for Duke. And, they're not looking with their heart. I know rivalry games matter and, you know, you play a little bit closer. And, maybe this one in particular matters a little bit more. But I don't think it has the same type of feel as it was 10 years ago.
Well, it doesn't because
because
here's why. We don't know the players.
The players don't have the pride in the school. They're only there a year.
That's a factor as well.
They're there to use the school as much as the school's there to use them.
Yeah, and that's a factor too. But when it comes to this game, you throw the records away. We talk about football. Michigan, Ohio State. Michigan sucked this year. They suck. They beat Ohio State's ass the last game of the year.
I would agree with you.
Because that's a rivalry that those teams are going to, you know this.
I guess what I'm saying, more than anything, rivalries in all sports, especially college basketball, have just gone dead.
Nothing like they used to be.
One and done has killed the history, the rivalries, the tradition that existed with these programs. I mean, you still have the tradition, but that's something that was 10 years ago. Duke, Carolina, regardless of what's – these guys cared of, I'm going to beat you because we were both recruited here. And they don't care.
And we're right down the road from each other.
Kids don't care about that anymore. They care – I mean, these guys are playing together at the park now and playing in the same AAU basketball leagues.
I wouldn't say that –
They're rooting for each other. They're going to help each other up. Now, there's not going to be bloody noses out there.
I wouldn't say that with a blanket. I would not say that because I'll tell you this much.
I think you want there to be, but I don't think there is.
I think that there's still players who are dogs that are still going to go out there and play for their school, regardless of how much money they're getting paid. Cooper Flagg, I don't even know what he's getting paid. Yeah. I have no idea.
But he's going to do that regardless if it's Carolina or if it's Louisville or if it's Kansas or if it's Kentucky Auburn.
You want a team of
I'm
guys
not saying
that
you
do
don't,
that.
But I'm not
but when you play Carolina, and this kind of goes back to another conversation we had about the Wildfires and the Rams, whatever. Duke, Carolina, I don't give a damn how much money you're getting paid. There are some kids that are uncoachable these days. There are some kids that are just there for themselves that want out. But any kid – when they walk into that atmosphere, especially at Duke, and I'm not saying that as a shot to Carolina, but obviously when you walk into Cameron, it's smaller, it's 120 degrees.
Yeah, I've been there. We've been there together. Yeah, yeah.
We went there a couple times. And
we got a great story about that, but yeah.
Well, I'll tell it real quick because it is one time Frank and I, we go to Duke. We go to Cameron for a game, and it was
my son. It was my son, and
it was me, you, T-Bone from FNZ,
that's right,
T-Bone. And then my wife, Krista.
Yeah.
And Krista had never been. I don't think T-Bone had been yet. And he's a big Duke fan. And I can't remember. You had been, I think, before. And I had been a couple times.
Yeah, well, right next to Duke, they have an auxiliary gym where they have
it's like a practice
store.
Court.
Well, they have the practice. Well, it's the auxiliary gym where
they were doing fencing in
where
there.
Where they do intramurals.
Yeah.
It's Duke's a very small, intimate school.
Yeah.
All right. And you look at where the Coliseum or the gym is, and it looks like an old church.
Yeah.
It's really a high school atmosphere feel.
Yeah, it is. And it's pouring down rain and I forget the name of the little restaurant, but there's a little barbecue joint right by the college that Pac-Man had turned me on to. So we go there, we eat, and then we go to the game. We had great seats. I think my buddy Doug Etheridge from RBC gave us the seats. And so we go to the game or we go to the Cameron. We tailgated, it's pouring down rain. We're not allowed in Cameron yet. So we go into the auxiliary gym that Frank was talking about and we're standing there and we had probably just pounded three or four beers in the truck.
Yeah. You go into the bookstore, which is right there connected to the auxiliary gym.
We walk through the museum and all that stuff. Well, my wife has to go to the bathroom and we're in the auxiliary gym. And I said, well, Krista, there's gotta be one. Just go over there, stairs over there. So she wanders.
Well, the bathrooms are downstairs.
Yeah. So she wanders in the auxiliary and she goes downstairs. Well, like 20 minutes goes by and nothing from Krista. And she's not answering her phone. And I'm thinking either she's got food poisoning and is just blowing the bathroom up, laying on the floor with,
underground tunnels all over the place because it's such a small place. But the auxiliary gym is connected to the
correct.
You can go down
the stairs and it brings you into Cameron. There's bathrooms, whatever. Well, finally, she answers my text and she comes walking in the complete other side of the auxiliary gym. And
where have you been?
Very like
aloof.
Yeah, she doesn't know. You know, she's you can tell she's bothered.
Yeah.
And I'm like, where the hell have you been? And she goes, well, I went down those stairs to go to the bathroom, and I think I ended up in the locker room for the game. And she doesn't know nothing about sports, by the way.
Zero.
So she was, I think
I don't know where I was at. I was just looking for the bathroom.
And then all of a sudden, some like guy in a suit comes up and starts screaming at me that I can't be in here. Get the fuck out of here. That's exactly the words. Yeah. And so she left. And I'm thinking, I wonder where the hell did she go? So we don't think about it.
We didn't know any of this at the time, by the way.
Yeah. So we go up to the museum to look in the museum. And as we're in the museum, there's this huge picture of Coach K on the wall. And Krista, not knowing anything, just stops. She goes, who is that? And I'm like, dude, that's Coach K, like one of the best coaches in the history of sports. And she goes, that's the dude that just yelled at me. And Frank and I and T-Bone were like, shut up. And I'm like, are you sure that guy? She goes, no, 100%. And I'm like, well, then you obviously wandered into the Duke locker room, you know, an hour before the game.
Looking for the girls' restroom.
Yeah. And so he probably did tell you to get out of there because you're not supposed to be there. But Coach K ripped Krista's butt for being in the locker room. Right. And we just died laughing. And then only Krista. Yeah, only Krista. And Duke won the game in great atmosphere. Yeah. But my point of all this, again, just to wrap this up, is that college basketball, which is in good, is still very good. It's a good quality basketball game. I was very impressed with all the games I watched. These kids can play, and the teams with the good coaching that the players are listening to and responding to. Now, for instance, again, not to shit on the Tar Heels again, but when I've watched them play, I feel as if those players are not listening to Hubert Davis. Mm-hmm. I think Hubert Davis is getting a lot of crap and fire him and all this stuff. I honestly think, and look, as a coach, it's your job to do that and recruit players that you can, that will listen and be coached. Mm-hmm. But that's the one thing I get with Carolina. I feel like a few of the kids, not like, I think Kadu's is coached. I think RJ Davis is being coached, but some of these other kids, I just feel they're not being coached. But these other teams I watched this weekend, it was great basketball, and it got me hooked again a little bit. So, like, I had not looked to see what games were on in basketball unless I was betting on them in a long time. And this morning, as I'm waking up, I'm looking at my phone. I kind of mapped out this week what games I'm watching, and it's going to be the Duke NC State and the Louisville Wake Forest and Carolina at Pittsburgh. Just in the ACC, there's other games and other conferences, obviously, that I'm going to watch. And then Saturday, I'm absolutely going to watch the Duke Carolina game, but I'll probably, depending on the weather, we may be sitting out at the pool bar where we have multiple TVs.
We'll watch that
TVs.
Somewhere together, I'm sure.
But yeah, watch. I do want to watch the Arkansas at Kentucky, just at least when Cal walks in. So I am excited about that. But if you're like me and Frank, and you kind of bailed from college basketball, you watch it enough to be dangerous. You know if your team won or lost. You know who their best player probably is. I would
100 times out of 100 today rather watch college basketball than the NBA.
Yeah, and that's still for sure. But man, I'm gonna tell you what: if you haven't watched college basketball like you used to, and you're in our age bracket, you know, 40 to 50, 55, you know, where you grew up when college basketball was great, go back and give it a shot. And I'm not, obviously, I have no ties with college basketball. I'm not, you know, I'm just telling you, watching these games again, I was very, very surprised and impressed about the quality of the games, and these coaches are getting it done. And if you look at the coaches of these good teams, they're all great coaches. So, you know, and there's some new blood coming in there. I mean, some of these SEC schools that we talked about, you know, you're seeing Ole Miss, you're seeing Mississippi State, you're seeing some of these schools that weren't or haven't been these big, you know, SMU, who's always been decent, but you know, they're at least dangerous. It's not just the blue bloods. I mean, Carolina is not even in the top 25 right now. NC State had a great year last year. They stink this year. So, you know, it's not necessarily the old schools. You still have a lot of that. Kansas is still getting it done. Kentucky's still getting it done.
You don't have the UCLA's. You don't have the Arizonas. You don't have the West Coast.
Arizona's still pretty damn good, but they're not a top.
I mean, when you're talking about the glory days and the golden years of college basketball, you're talking about the 90s and early 2000s. You know, you had your 5-6 teams that were blue blood teams: Arizona, UCLA, Duke, Carolina, Kentucky, Kansas. You know, you throw in Florida in there every now and then. They want a couple back to back. You know, you have about a handful of teams. UConn up north, Syracuse.
Yeah, but UConn is. I've watched their last three games. First of all, you know, a Duke fan, love Bobby Hurley. Danny Hurley, I'm over it. I'm over the dude. Like, do I think he's a good coach? Yeah, but I don't know if there's a more arrogant dude in sports. And And every game, dude, he's bitching and whining about something. Every game. I mean, last game, they had him on film. I don't know if you saw this, but he was screaming at the referee, and the referee turned his back to walk away, and he said, hey, don't you turn your back on me. I'm the best coach in the damn country, you know, which he could argue he is. He's won back-to-back championships.
Yeah, I mean, but, is there any arguing that?
Yeah,
I mean,
well, but my point is I'm over his shit.
If you're going to – I mean, how do you think Coach K got respect? How do you think that –
Well, no, Dean Smith
got respect.
But the way Hurley does it, it just gets on my damn nerves. I can't stand him. And after the game, he said, well, you know, I wish the cameras weren't on me all the time. I see these other coaches yelling at the referees just as bad as I do.
And he's right.
He's right, but shut up. Shut up, dude.
Oh, God.
Shut up. You're making like $28 million, whatever. Shut up.
So he's not supposed to advocate for his team?
I'm not saying that at all, but you ain't got
to. You just don't
there.
Like the fact that they've won the last 2 years.
No, I don't. I rooted for them. I don't dislike UConn.
They have the Kansas City effect on you.
No. Nah,
the Chiefs.
I didn't mind UConn winning.
You're going to think Andy Reid's a jerk here.
No, I love
him. And Andy Reid's as nice a guy as you're going to find. Doesn't say anything else.
I love Andy Reid. I have no problem with Andy Reid. I don't like Philadelphia's coach. I think Sirianni's.
And he doesn't say anything.
He's got like the best winning record for
right.
a coach at his point in time ever. But anyway, if you were a college basketball fan and you found that you faded over the past few years, I'll say is this. Pick a few games. Obviously, whatever your favorite team
is. Don't watch this Duke Carolina game. It's going to be a blowout.
I don't think it'll be a blowout. I think Carolina will bring it. I hope it's a blowout. But I think Carolina will bring it. But anyway, check it out again. I was very surprised. And
double digit victory.
Especially with football being gone, it's now kind of give me something to watch again because the Hornets stink and hopefully they're in the
Cooper. NBA, you know, in general.
NBA is not, product. Yeah, it's not nearly what it used to be. I'll still watch Hurricane games and all that, but college basketball this weekend kind of worked itself back into me. And I'm excited about watching these games. And
I can see.
And from a gambling standpoint too, you know, which my son Connor bets every freaking game in Japan, Tokyo, you know, every sport from badminton to freaking, you know, I don't know what the kid's betting.
Yeah, and give him two turtle screwing, if it's competitive, he's going to bet on.
Yeah, and he's betting, you know, he'll bet a 17-team $5 parlay and win $8,000. That's the damnest thing I've ever seen. But thank you guys for joining us today. You can find all of our podcasts archived wherever you get your favorite podcast. You can watch us if you want to, YouTube. Like I said, we've got two podcasts dropping this week. One is a new series, Charlotte Sports Originals, where Frank and I interview Mark Yarbrough, who has been in this market for over 30 years in radio and covering sports. And we've got some other great interviews lined up for that coming your way. And then our big Super Bowl will be up next week. And like I said, we're going to have
some handicappers,
different take on that. There'll be some cooking, some handicapping, some drinking, and get you guys ready for the big game. So thanks again for joining us on Suit Up Sports. DJ the Suit Stout, Frank Garcia, thank you for Big Dylan over there for producing. I know I look over at Dylan sometimes when we're talking and I'm supposed to be done and I can just see him going, dude, like I gotta go. Yeah, I gotta go. And you know, this is the beauty of podcast and radio, where you and I both came from radio, where we had to break at a certain time. Mm-hmm. We had to do this podcast. I'd be like, yeah, screw this. We'll
start rambling.
We'll just keep rambling. So anyway, thanks again for joining us and we'll see you next week.